Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to A Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and this afternoon I am delighted to be joined by both Lawrence Conley and James McKenzie, two of the Axom contributors who were at the gig the other night at Gracie's. Let's start off with that. After the event, my missus said, "Who was the boy with the Jota haircut?" I said, "That's wee Jamesy on the wing." James, how did you enjoy it?
Well, I'm not too sure I'd be that handy on the wing in our football team, to be honest, but it was great fun. Thank you as well to everybody that came up, everybody that said hi, everybody that bought us a pint as well. And I'm sure they'd all agree that it was a phenomenal show. It was a great night.
I was just saying that, you know, it's one of these things. It's a great wee setting. It's a pub setting. We know that maybe by back 8, 9 o'clock, everybody's had a few scoops. That's what it's all about. But generally speaking, Lawrence, at gigs like that, maybe by about 8, 9 o'clock, there's a bit of chatter in the background. I'm not, you know, the type of person that tells people to shush unless they're getting a wee bit rowdy. I wouldn't get involved because you're in a pub. That's what you expect. But unusually, Granty had them in the palm of his hand. There was silence for most of the evening.
He was absolutely outstanding. You know, there've been quite a few gigs, same as yourself. And yeah, he was absolutely unbelievable. And, you know, Celtic through and through, you know,
really,
talking about
really.
The values of, you've got to be aware everything you do represents your club. Everything you get involved in represents your club, and you've got to look after that then properly. Is, you know, so whether you're an employee or an ex-employee of Celtic, and I think, you know, it kind of, we all feel that, don't we? You know, people, you know, the standards to uphold when you represent Celtic and expect staff members to do that. It was great to meet, you know, Stevie was there with his mate Shug and Walter Orr. Mr. Diamond, Bob McLean, Sean Kelly. Great to meet all those guys that watch all the time, you know, and have a chat. And just, you know, Peter Grant, what a legend, mate. You know, ground staff at 15. Oh,
yeah.
All the way through. Yeah. What a guy. And on the way in, I met Peter outside, walking down the street. And he was like, "Do you know what Gracie says?" I was like, I'll show you. And
follow me.
Yeah. We went up to the door, and the bouncer was like, "Ah, yeah. You see, for the Peter Grant thing, boys." That is Peter Grant.
Superb, by the way. Superb. There's quite a lot of things you can take from it, though. Peter Grant spoke about always, 24/7 to this day, being Peter Grant of Celtic, and the way that he conducts himself, and where that came from. And it came from, you know, what you would call an apprenticeship, I guess, back in the day, where you're on the ground staff and you're doing jobs in and around the park. You're also a Celtic player. You're basically going, you're graduating eventually into the reserve team. But what you're doing is you're cleaning boots and you're sweeping terraces and you're doing all that stuff. You're helping Neely with the kit, Neely Mocking. But then he spoke about the importance of that culture where it goes into a dressing room and the first guy he sees is Danny McGrain. And then he sees guys like Roy Aiken and Tommy Burns. You know, he came through with the likes of Paul McGugan and Paul McStay, who broke in a wee bit earlier than them. But it's the senior pros that you then look up to, and then they set a standard, and you follow that standard, and maybe in 8 or 10 years' time, you're the senior pro, and you set the standard, and the young kids come through, and the baton's passed down from generation to generation. And it was all about a culture, James, and a standard of being a Celtic employee and a representative of the club. That came through loud and clear, didn't it?
Yeah, and it's not just a thing of those times either. You can even link that to modern-day Celtic, and all these players had to work their way through the team, the likes of your Cal McGregors, your Kieran Tierneys, these guys that we call modern Celtic legends, they all had to go through the same sort of trials and tribulations, and that's just the way you become a Celtic player. It's the culture around the club. That's just sort of what Peter Grant had to go through. So especially with talking about the guys like Danny McGrain, these were his heroes. When you're walking into a dressing room seeing these guys, it's natural to get starstruck, but eventually you prove yourself there on the proving ground, then you become a Celtic star.
Yeah, aye, for sure. And I remember getting told a story. I think it may have been somebody like Willie Garner, who's a Celtic fan all his life. He finally gets the opportunity. He's through your neck of the woods, I think, actually, James. Kind of Denny way through that neck of the woods. And yeah. Finally signs for Celtic. It didn't work out for him, but he was speaking about being on the team bus, Lawrence, going to games, and the fact that you're sitting there and Tommy Burns comes along, sits next to you, and just fills your head full of Celtic and what it means to be a Celtic player, what you're representing and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, Willie says to me he probably did that through his whole career as a Celtic player and then as a Celtic manager. And then obviously when he moves on to work in youth development, he worked obviously with Kenny Dalglish's team behind the scenes, Martin O'Neill's team, the whole shebang, Gordon Strachan's side. And players like that, I feel, and I know I'm a bit of a traditionalist when it comes to Celtic, but I think they are worth their weight in gold. And that's why it's important for me anyway, as a Celtic fan, to have guys like Callum McGregor, Jamesy Forrest, Tony Ralston at the club. Lawrence, is this something that in the modern day is often overlooked, the importance of guys like that?
I think all clubs understand there's an importance of continuity at a club. You know, you need to have that history. You know, without your history, what are you? So I think there's definitely, most clubs understand that. I just think we've got a better history than most. You know, Billy McNeil said it was something, you know, a fairy tale about the club, and you're passing that down, aren't you? You know, the kind of the struggles the club has had right through the present day. Obviously set up to feed the poor children of the parishes. So I think all that gets passed on. You know, there was talk when Tommy was manager, passing over the videos, making sure the players had watched the videos about the history of the club. And it gives them that connection with the fans, doesn't it? It gives them that understanding of where we're from, you know, and understanding how to become a Celt, you know, what's expected of you.
Yeah, because it's not just about talent, it's about the way that you conduct yourself. And I think that we've seen a huge, not even a transformation, but maybe it's just come to the fore with the likes of Callum McGregor, the way he conducts himself as a Celtic player, as a Celtic captain. And obviously in the modern day, it's maybe even more important because, you know, the vast majority of the squad now are made up of players from all over the world, whereas back in the day, overseas players were few and far between. Certainly, you know, in Peter's day, he's seen maybe nearer the end of his career, guys coming in like Darius Dovcek, Jackanowski, people like that. But, you know, back in his earlier days, it was mainly Scottish and Irish-based players, Lauren. So it is important to this day that Callum is now that role model, if you like. And imagine being a youngster at the club and seeing, you know, the most senior pros, Scott Brown before Callum, by the way, you know, going about your business like that and being the ultimate professional. That's going to rub off on you. It becomes a culture after a while. And I think it's fantastic to hear from the likes of Granty. One last tale from him that I thought was hilarious that I wasn't aware of. And I hope that at some point I get time to go back and watch EastEnders episodes from 1987. But apparently at that time, sorry, James, this is before your time, pal, but Lawrence will remember it. Dirty Den got banged up. He was in the nick. What was in the nick for, by the way, Lawrence? Can you remember?
Did he murder somebody or something? I don't know.
I can't remember, but...
Maybe that's the actor, I think.
Oh, Leslie Grantham definitely ended up in jail for real.
Yeah, he ended up in jail for real for something, didn't
right.
he?
Right, it was manslaughter or murder, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's something like that.
What about the character? Somebody the old school, somebody the Albert Square CSC in the comments might be able to clarify this. Dirty Den ended up in prison on EastEnders, right? Now, you'll remember at that time, we had signed Frank McAvenny from West Ham, and obviously he had got a friendship with, what was her name now? What was her name? Ian Beale's mum, Kathy Beale. Kathy Beale. James is laughing because he's like, what on earth are you talking about? Kathy
Beale.
Jillian, that's her. And McAvenny was photographed in the, what's the name of the boozer? Queen Vic.
Yeah.
He was in the Queen Vic and he was with Anita Dobson, Brian May's wife. And what did you say her name is? Jillian?
Lauren Telford.
Jillian, yes. And there was big pictures of him because he was a West Ham darling of the fans, and they were all Hammers fans, and Dirty Den Watts was a Hammers fan. Anyway, I'll get to the point, ladies and gentlemen. So apparently, Dennis, Dirty Den, when he was in prison, he had one poster on his wall, and the poster on his wall was a cutout from the Shoot magazine, and it was Peter Grant blessing himself in front of the Rangers crowd. How on earth that ended up on the show, I have no idea. But it did, and Peter Grant is very proud of that to today, to the very day. Now, to more serious matters. Yesterday, Colin and I, at the very end of the show, mentioned the fact that Celtic were playing Rangers. We were, at that point, 6 points behind the league leaders, Rangers sitting in third, of course, with 10 games to go. Big game. Now, it's one of these things as well. Come to you first, James, because I know that in your current kind of role, at the stage of your career, you're covering everything from first-team football to B-team football, women's football. And you know, the authorities really are trying to push, and the clubs as well, Celtic, really try to push the women's game. There's a game, it's live on Sky TV. What an advert for the women's game, you know. It's live on Sky. It's an international break. There's people there. What kind of makeup's the crowd going to be? Well, you maybe take your kids to a game like that, you know, just to introduce them into what it's like to go to the game. And then, after the game, there's an incident, and the incident involves a Rangers coach who thinks it's appropriate, Craig McPherson, and by the way, totally unprovoked, to headbutt Fran Alonso from the back, right, and then abuse him verbally by calling him a rat. Now, this was after a 1-1 draw where we scored an equaliser in the 9th minute because we never stopped, and it was Caitlin Hughes that got the goal. But what's actually overshone all of that kind of stuff, the fact that it was a great ending to the game, is the fact that our coach, Fran Alonso, has been assaulted on the park. So let's talk about the incident first and foremost, and then we'll have a talk about the fact that this isn't an isolated incident. There seems to be more of an issue here, and we'll have a wee look at that and what's going to be done about it, because, you know, this is on the back of Celtic refusing tickets for Ibrox due to safety concerns of our fans as well as the fan experience. Safety concerns of our fans. This is following broken glass in Joe Hart's goal mouth. Our physiotherapist getting hit in the back of the head with a bottle, which split his head open and required stitches. The fact that weapons were found stashed in a bin before a Celtic Rangers game, right, that were attributed to the Union Bears. Going back further, Scott Brown attacked on the park. Oh, we'll just put the fan who attacked him back in his seat. There you go, nothing happens. Lee Griffiths getting batteries thrown at them, and it goes on and on and on. And there's an issue here. And it's about time that the authorities did something to ensure the safety of Celtic's players, fans and staff. And by the way, before we get into the discussion, I actually heard or seen that one of the pundits were talking about this, and in the same breath spoke about plastic cups getting thrown at Steven Gerrard. No, this isn't an issue where you can throw Celtic into the mix. This is a Rangers issue. James, let's talk about the incident last night first and foremost.
No, I never thought I'd hear whataboutery from a pundit on the Sky TV. That's usually left to the crazy fans. But these are professional football clubs. Mm-hmm. And that's arguably one of the most unprofessional acts that you could get. He's not only attacked them, but he's attacked them from behind. It's a blind, cowardly attack. And Fran, he seems to be all right. He seems to have taken it well. But it's not something you expect. If anybody had any doubts that the sort of rivalry or the heat or the tension had carried over from the first team to the women's team, it's evidently clear now that it's still there. And you've got to wonder what sort of punishment's going to be dished out. Is it a lifetime ban? Is it a couple months suspension? I'm sure many people, their opinions will vary on what the ban should be, if any, which I've got doubts over whether he'll get banned for headbutting some opposition manager in the back of the head says it all, but we'll just need to wait and see. But it's completely unprofessional and cowardly as well.
Totally cowardly. You're right, from the back where Fran, and I've watched, like everybody else, I've watched the footage. I'm thinking to myself, what has led to that attack? You know, what was the prelude to that? Nothing. Fran is shaking the hands of both his own players and the players of the opposing team. You could go even further back because things will continue to come to my mind. Scottish Cup final against Hibs. All right, we got beat. Let's cause a riot. And also, you know, even further back than that, when they didn't win their playoff against Motherwell and Mosny. Was it Bilal Mosny, the guy that used to play with Southend? Thought it was all right to basically attack Motherwell players. Now, it isn't an isolated incident. And what actually happens here is if someone so unruly is allowed to conduct themselves in such a way, Lawrence, without any repercussions whatsoever, they'll continue to do it. And that's exactly what's happening here.
But there's a thread in that. It's kind of the repercussions, because it's a gradual thing. I mean, you even go back to the so-called Shane game. The Rangers got 4 sent off, 9 yellow carded. Celtic physios barred when he's come on a park to treat an injured player by Elhaj Diouf. I think was a superintendent had to drag him away from Golden fans.
More and more examples are coming to mind just as you're talking.
The outcome of that was Neil Lennon got banned. I think we had 1 yellow card in the game. But the Shane game, because it was Celtic and Rangers, it was like 4 red cards, 9 yellows versus 1 yet. But the harshest punishment went to Celtic. Where are the repercussions coming from? You look about when they were. The old club had went bust and the new club's trying to get into a league. Let's be honest, what repercussions did they get for cheating? What was the fine? You know, the judge comes out and says the only thing worse is match fixing.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Minuscule fine compared to what it done. A Rangers fan and head of registrations decided, let's keep all the trophies. Let's try. If it wasn't for guys like Turnbull Hutton, really, would they really have any? Would there really been any consequences? Because you know, the consequence of going bust is they should have started off in the bottom tier. They didn't even have to do that. They made up fictitious, you know, temporary licenses to allow them to play. You know, they shoehorned them in above other clubs. You know, you were made of 3 years' accounts before you could get into the bottom tier of professional football. No requirement for that because it was, you know, it was a new club. They wouldn't have had it. Right through it, you know, the dispute with Cinch, trying to pressure clubs to change their votes and things. Definitely bring the game into disrepute. Mm-hmm. What were the consequences? But the SFA, does it do consequences? Well, look at what referees and the controversy there. What are the consequences there? What's happened? And if you frame this as purely a Rangers issue, you've touched on Motherwell. There's the Hibs Cup final. Mm-hmm. The list is pretty endless. What consequences and what sanctions does the club face for any of these? The SFA have still comment on this. The SWPL have still comment on this. I think they got a quote from the Rangers manager saying, I've not seen it, but you know, we'll need to have a look at it and then start an investigation. Surely the Rangers should be commenting straight away. You know, that video is pretty indefensible.
Yeah.
it just seems to be a lack of will within Scottish football administration to take any action or any meaningful action against this club that's going to persuade them to act differently. Because a slap in the wrist, fine. If it's not deterrent and doesn't change their ways, what's the point of it? You've got to have some kind of sanction that's going to mean that they change what happens. And see, if it doesn't, pretty soon they'll think they're above the law and that they can break rules and regulations with impunity, which pretty much, you know, the predecessor club and this club seem to be able to do.
Yeah, yeah. You know, even the celebrations after they win the title, Lawrence, and during a virtually global lockdown, and constantly, you know, getting taken to task and nothing happening. You remember the mobile phone footage, and there was claims that, it was being dubbed. Oh, really? But it's repercussions that don't happen. Ryan Kent punching Scott Brown in the centre circle. Did he even get booked? You know, Halliday then. Yellow cards. Oh, yeah, for an assault.
Should he be good enough either?
I know. And then Halliday, remember, he lost his mind at the end of that game as well. And, Lustig's walking about with a ripped T-shirt. It wasn't it bad? Because, I mean, obviously, Lustig with a ripped T-shirt doesn't look so bad. But it's about repercussions. And, you know, this is one in a long line of incidents that even when Lawrence is talking, they're more and more come to your mind. And I'm not having that Celtic are thrown into the mix here and that it's an issue and, you know, it's the pair of them are the issue. It's not. It's absolutely not that whatsoever. Celtic have acted on the tickets. We spoke about it, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, and it was an issue. And this was very, very important. It was a fan safety concern. You know, 750 fans were not safe at Ibrox Stadium. So Celtic said, you know, unless we go back to the normal situation, we're not taking your tickets. And by the way, you're not coming to Celtic Park. So
on that point, it's not just Celtic fans that are safe there. You speak to Hibs fans and Aberdeen fans and Dundee United fans, they're getting fans injured in that corner, they're getting stuff thrown at them. It's every game.
Yep.
You've got to ask Glasgow City Council, how does that stadium retain its safety certificate? Why aren't the nettings up to stop the bottles and stuff landing on opposition fans?
Again, why is the bottles even in the stadium?
No, listen.
You could take it even further back.
No, you can do your searches and, you know, sometimes some things will get in. But why is there no safety net in there? I get that it costs money. Other stadiums around the world have it. Why aren't you saying as a condition of your licence, you need to put that us? Because there's a number of incidents going on year upon year where we can see most games of this and away fans are going to get stuff thrown at them. That's not an acceptable risk. So to mitigate that risk, you've got your searches. We understand some bottles get through, but you need to put up the safety net.
Right.
Honestly, I can't understand why they're not being forced to do that.
Imagine, though, Lawrence, imagine the scenario that they did that, right? And I agree with you, and I think that as a safety measure has to be done, right? They did that, and we're looking at the situation next season. There's only one club, there's only one stadium in Scotland where you need safety netting, and there's only one club that aren't allowed into Celtic Park. Why is this? And again, it goes right back to that common denominator. And the fact, James, that there is no real sufficient action taken. I mean, to assault someone on the football park. Now, we all know that what happened to Duncan Ferguson back in the day, right? He ended up in Bar Linney.
He was under a suspended sentence at the time as well.
Oh, I know. I know the circumstances of Ferguson, yeah. But assaulting somebody on the football park, which is what happened last night, it's not something like there's been a flashpoint, two people have gone in for a tackle, and then there's a push or a punching because, you know, in terms of football, fights are handbags at dawn. This guy has shot him out. And there's no provocation whatsoever. But what is the provocation? The fact that his team lost a goal in the ninth minute.
The flashpoint is Celtic scoring a last minute.
Scoring a goal.
Yeah, that's the flashpoint. I just want to touch on the point you're making about at Ibrox as well. Where the Celtic fans are placed, it's right in the firing line. You're basically backed into a corner with them at either side. You're right in the firing line, and bottles are going to rain down. And the fact that Celtic have had to pull the fans out because it's unsafe, the viewing experience, even when you're after the game, when you're kept there for God knows how long. I've never been to Ibrox, thankfully. But it's just the fact that Celtic are having to not allow tickets because the match day experience, it might not be safe enough or it just isn't adequate for a football game. It's just crazy.
But let's be clear on something. That's not why Celtic are having to pull them out. Celtic are having to pull them out because the authorities are refusing to act on this. It's the authorities' job to act on it and make sure it's safe, to hand out repercussions they're refusing to act on it, in some cases even acknowledge there's a problem. So Celtic are doing this because the authorities refuse to act. You're left with no option. You know, they'll get a duty of care to Glasgow City Council that they're issuing a safety certificate. Police Scotland are there. They know there's going to be incidents. The Rangers themselves, people, whether it's visiting fans or away fans, or home fans, should be safe in the stadium.
Yeah.
They're refusing to act. The SFA should be acting on this, and they're refusing. Celtic were left with no choice. This is what happens. You know, and we talked about a Hibs manager kicking a ball in the park. You know, your manager sets the standard for your club, for the players. Yeah. What do they think? This is the assistant manager. What standard is he setting to his players?
We started off the discussion talking about standards, Lawrence, talking about, you know, the role model and looking up to, oh, this is a culture at Celtic Football Club. What's the culture at Rangers? What is that culture? And what's the culture within Scottish football when, like you quite rightly say, the authorities, who, by the way, in terms of the ticket situation, have had plenty of time to act on that, Lawrence, and they haven't. And it took until Celtic made a decision. How's that affecting the fixture? That was a big discussion for the last fortnight. Okay, women's football needs promoted properly. We've been saying it on this podcast for long enough. It's on Sky TV. You know what I mean? It's going out to a much bigger audience. And what happens? Who's it that creates an issue? The same football club. The same football club that apparently is creating an issue for the fixture. Same football club that's creating an issue for Cinch, the sponsorship, that doesn't seem to create an issue with any other football club in the league. So that it's one issue and it's one club and it needs to be dealt with. What will the authorities do, Lawrence?
I think they'll bury their head. I think they'll do nothing. They'll leave it to the police. You know, who knows what the police will do. You know, can't see how they won't charge them. But it's a police investigation. But we've all seen the video there. So you can, you know, it's quite straightforward what's happened there. So, yeah, I'd imagine that the police will do it. NS, the police have dealt with it. Really? You need to be dealing with stuff too. There's a huge issue here. And it even goes across to the referees and to VAR favouring one club. You don't seem to want to step in and do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Kyogo gets a marginally offside goal, perhaps. It's not yet been proven against Hearts. Head of referees out speaking.
Exactly.
Well, no, but any of these controversies were...
Crawford-Allen comes out to talk about an offside. I mean, look at what's happened since then. What about... By the way, I am going back to Peter Grant the other night, simply because, not to promote anything or whatever, Grant, he told us a great wee story about VAR, didn't he? About the lines.
Yeah.
And he's got a mate who works in a VAR office down south, who is either a Liverpool or a Man United fan, and if he wants to narrow and make the line thinner, then he will.
Yeah, or make it thicker to blur the lines.
Or make it thicker to blur the lines, yeah. So it is happening.
I definitely, listen, there's human intervention in there. We need to take out the bias, the unconscious bias in that. And there's loads of ways they could do it, but they have no will to do it. But appear that, you know, they're not interested in making the change. And it's either because the SFA is an organisation that, you know, inherently biased. We've got enough evidence stretching back decades to say they are. You know,
institutional bias, isn't it? It really is.
Back decades. And yeah. If it wasn't for guys like, you know, I'm not talking about all Scottish football, I'm talking about the SFA, because Turnbull Hutton, if he hadn't stood up, what would have happened? You know,
he stood up and says that they were being bullied, Lawrence.
Yeah.
They were being bullied into trying to make decisions. They were pushing them in a certain direction. And he stood at the steps at Hampden Park and said that, didn't he?
Aye, he did. You know, it's guys like him that, you know, at least they weren't shoehorned into the top division, you know, which would have been utter travesty. How anyone could have thought that was any kind of natural justice? Crazy. Unless you're looking at it as a Rangers fan, you're going, well, that's it. But the kind of kowtowing to them and the continual non-sanctions of them, it leads to this kind of behaviour because they think it they're above the law.
Yeah.
You think they can do anything they want. You talked about the Facebook Live videos that were apparently dubbed. Facebook Live dubbed. That'd been great. There was a number of issues. How many mobile phones are there? About 8 different footage from 8 different vantage points. So syncing that dubbing must have been some tech, even if you can.
Some edit. Yeah. Some edit pretty quickly. Like, you know.
You must have Warner Brothers. They'd be editing that quickly.
It would need to be somebody for Warner Brothers. You're right.
It's for the all those devices. Then they went to one of their officers to review the footage. I think inside 24 hours. I don't even think we'd had the warrants to seize the devices, you know what I mean? But Police Scotland are coming out going, nothing to see here.
Buried. Absolutely. But yeah. And you could take it deeper.
We're not going to,
yeah. And we could take it even deeper, you know, with regards to how much certain cases have cost the taxpayer. And they've been proven to have been, obviously, you know, when you look at the way that they've been set up, we absolutely no evidence whatsoever. And we're talking tens of millions of pounds here. Anybody who's even looked at that will be astonished. And again, it's one club. James, I've asked Lawrence, what will be done? Lawrence has no confidence. If anybody's ever watched Lawrence Connolly, they will know he has no confidence in the authorities in Scottish football. And with good reason, by the way, Lawrence, I've got to say. What do you think should be done, James?
What should be done? Well, a very lengthy ban, I think, for sure. What do I think will be done? I think it'll be very minimal. As I've gone over this last 28 minutes, we've gone back to many Celtic Rangers flashpoints from one side's end, and the ban is always minimal if there is a ban. So I'm sure we'll all be disappointed with the outcome of what this ban is, but I think it should be a very lengthy ban.
Well, this is the thing as well. Sorry to not name drop Granty again. It's our new best pal, right? He used to have a haircut like yours, James, but he had kind of blonde tints in it and the wee curly bits around there, wee mullet. Brilliant.
He was
Jota before Jota, exactly. Didn't have the mouser, though. But he was talking about that. What was that?
He did an 88.
He had a mouser?
He all the players dressed up and
he did. That's he right. They had the original jerseys on at Celtic Park, didn't they? Yeah, you're right. That's a great picture. When Peter Grant made the headlines for blessing himself after the goal that was scored, that Granty's still claiming it, but it was given as a butcher OG in the 2-2 game. What then obviously transpired is the McAvaney and the brawl and Graham Roberts and Terry Butcher, Chris Woods and McAvaney were all taken to court, right? We all know what happened. But what Grant reminded us of was that the following day on Scotsport, as it would have been Scotsport on the Sunday at 5, I think, Lawrence, 5 o'clock, right? And they were blaming Peter Grant for that, for having the audacity to bless himself. They were blaming Peter Grant for everything that then ensued. So even then, the media had this narrative that, you know, blessing yourself and being a Catholic is so bad that it's ended up with three people at court.
Mate, it's so bad you can get charged for it. Ask Arthur Borich. But the weird thing is, you ask what should happen. We're all talking about treating a symptom here. That guy headbutting Alonso is just a symptom. That's not the problem. There's a bigger problem in Scottish football. And we've discussed how it manifests itself in referees or favourable treatment to one club. You know, the only club to have a season extended. You know, in whose interest was that? For one club? It seems utterly bizarre that they don't want to address the wider issue. They lost the president in SFA, they lost the head of the referees, all through a connected issue. They need to be looking at us and going, we've got a serious problem.
Yeah. Scotland's shame strikes again. Right, let's have a wee look at some of the comments coming in. Stephen Sloan, welcome back to the show. You're watching on YouTube. Anyone else out there who's watching on YouTube, feel free to give us a wee thumbs up. And if you wish, you can subscribe to the channel. We'll be going out live every single day on the Bulletin. And there's loads of other programmes that we are working on that will give you more free content. If the SFA don't punish Craig McPherson, then what's the next step? Beale squared up to Kennedy, seeing a pattern here of aggression on the touchline from Rangers. It's just what we're talking about, Stephen. If you're allowed, if you can push the envelope, you keep pushing it and keep pushing it and nobody punishes you, you're going to continually behave in that way because you know you're going to get away with it. David O'Raw, that hooligan should never be allowed near a football pitch again. Well, what kind of example does it set to the fans? I mean, I wasn't at the game. I know that some of the Axon team were. And I know our very own Amy was covering it as well. But I think that the makeup of the fan base, you can maybe keep me right on this one, James, is more of a getting your kids along to games and maybe introducing them to the football through the women's game, first and foremost, and then obviously getting them to a point where you're maybe confident taking them to one of the men's games. Would you say that's fair? There's a lot of families going to these games.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, I'm sure we could probably get the general census from the comment section as well, because well, most of the fans, it's because these games are seen as sort of more chilled out. You're not going to get as much sort of tension or aggro as you would at the first team game. So it's usually seen as, say, if they go up and get all the photos taken of the players after the games, it's usually all good. Then you see scenes like this. But I just want to make a point, because I've seen people on Twitter really talking about this. It's, well, we don't want the tension and the aggro out of the fixture. That's something that we love about the Celtic-Rangers rivalry. But that's not tension, that's not aggro. It's a cowardly attack, is what that was on Fran Alonso. We all love the scenes like when Neil Lennon and Ali McCoist squared up on the touchline, an iconic derby moment. We all remember those. We love that. But this is different. This is, it's cowardly. It's an attack. And this sort of thing you don't want to see.
You're right. And by the way, let's have a look at some of the moments you're talking about, right? So you've got Bruni doing the Bruni. That's a moment. I mean, that's not going to incite a riot. That's you know, gamesmanship, right? Or Lenny giving a bit of that. I need to do it. Aye. One of the ones
for
Lenny.
For Bruni, though, he scores, he puts his arms out. Why?
He just stood there with his arms.
What's the celebration? You know, why is it a yellow card? Is it for scoring the goal? Did the ref not like his team going behind?
Probably the latter. But as you say, these moments, these flashpoints, you know, Callum McGregor having a wee word with Barisic in his ear, all that kind of stuff. That's what this game, this is what top flight football has. And you know what? They are flashpoints, of course they are, but they're enjoyable. They're not going to incite a riot. Yeah. And this is taking it to a completely different level. And if that happens at a football game, then it could cause aggro. You know what I mean? And it could emanate from the pitch onto the stands, into the stands and onto the terraces. So, yeah, we will be talking about some other matters today, but that is obviously the main one, which is we've discussed for the last half hour. What are your thoughts? What should be the sanctions? Should they be banned for life? Should it be sin died? Xander Mack, Glasgow kiss, more like a Glasgow peck on the cheek, but should be looking at a long ban all the same, especially when most of the crowd is kids. See, there's a good point, Xander. But going back to what Lauren said, this is a symptom of the issue, the deep underlying issue. What's going to get done with that? What can be done about that once?
Listen, honestly, they need to be setting up an inquiry here. They need to be getting people from outside Scottish football. And look, it probably goes even deeper. We know Scottish football isn't run right. You know, there's a lot of joys for people at the top. You lose guys like Brian McClair, they could be helping with development there at Hampden. And I think it's just, it seems to be an old boys' network or some kind of secret network going on that's running Scottish football, not for the benefit of the promotion of football in any one way. And you've got to think, well, Scotland's football daft. There's more participation of football ahead of population in any other country in the world. What is it that, you know, it's amateur, you know, Colin McBride had to take, Conor Wrestling had to take the SFA to task a number of times because of the crazy decisions that favoured one club. Honestly, you know, the government stepped in over the shame game. How did Celtic get pulled into that? You know, I think we get, was it one or two yellows? They had 9 yellows, 4 reds. But Celtic were lumped in, you know, both as bad as each other. That is just for a fact. You mentioned riots. What were the last 4 riots involved in Scottish football? Was it title celebrations? Was it the Rangers Hibs Cup final? You know, there's one club that's involved with all the last 4 riots.
There's another one that you've just mentioned there, the title celebrations, in inverted commas, celebrations. And we've all seen what happened at George Square. Remember that? How could you forget? I've just been informed, thank you, James, because that is what you're all about, young man. The police to investigate the headbutt on Celtic boss. So that is a breaking story that's just come out.
Yeah, the inquiries to establish criminality, which is a headbutt in the back of the head. This is clear on Sky. Everybody could see.
Absolutely. I mean, but again, you know, we could also take in some other incidents within Scottish football, and this is where the problem lies as well, where people have been taken to court and done for a breach when it was a clear assault. But absolutely, it's good that the inquiries have begun. to establish the criminality. And we will be watching that with interest. I'm keen to get more of your thoughts on the issue. Stevie Boy comes in, can't guarantee the safety of pundits. There's another one, Lawrence. Oh, remember Chris Sutton? Sorry, couldn't guarantee safety.
It wasn't even a Celtic Rangers game either, was it not? During the Europa League run?
What does that say about them? You know, that's our main stand, and we can't guarantee somebody's safety. And what are their suited and booted supporters going to do? You know, what are they expecting to happen? Should they be letting them in if they expect these guys, if that's the behaviour that's expected of them? If they see somebody they don't like, they'll attack them. Well, should you be filming your stands with guys like that? Probably not. You know, you might. Well, look what happened to the Celtic physio. It was a guy from the padded seats that threw a bottle in the head. He's scarred for life now. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's. We have a problem and we need to address it as a club, but why they're not, they're refusing to address it. The SFA and Scottish football as a whole need to say, look, we need to draw a line under this. This can't be allowed to continue. And you see, you know, show racism, the red card. Do they really mean anything about that when it comes to sectarianism? I don't think so. You don't see many sanctions. You hear the songs every week in, week out, band songs that have been deemed illegal in Scottish courts.
Yep.
The commentators on TV refuse to mention it. The SFA refuse to take action. The SPL refuse to take action. Mm-hmm. And the club themselves, they don't seem to be taking any action at all.
No.
There doesn't seem to be really any progress at all. And it's because they don't want to progress, let's be honest. They're quite happy with that. You remember a Justice Secretary who was at a Scottish Celtic Rangers game at Hampden. 90 minutes of bigotry from Rangers fans, and he described it as a great advert. You know, he couldn't see the problem with it. And that tells you, I think, everything you need to know about society. They generally can't see a problem with a lot of this stuff because it's no effect to name, it's against someone else.
This is it. And I mean, I've written the tagline, you know, unable to ensure the safety of our players, staff and fans, but also throw pundits in there as well. So who is safe? Who is safe? And, you know, Lawrence, I get the feeling, having watched Scottish football my whole life, that the authorities won't be keen to do anything or make an example of Rangers Football Club. So again, does it then trickle down to Celtic to make a stance here? Because do we have a figure who is strong enough to do it? Now, there's a massive criticism around the figurehead who was a CEO two CEOs ago, Peter Lawwell, and certain things he didn't stand up to whilst he was in position at Celtic Football Club. Do we have someone strong enough to actually take them to task on this? What do you think, Lawrence?
We're ready to come out, you know, and we'll hopefully bring them after stay ahead and say, look, we're not taking tickets. It's not safe. You know, it's 2023, and fans can't go to a football game without being pelted with balls. We can't have a staff attending an opposition stadium without being pelted with balls. Something needs to change. So that's bringing it to a head, but Celtic's main problem is, where can you go to complain? The SFA? Well, when they lost the head of refs, they lost their president for being biased against Celtic. You know, and when they lost their president, the two internal inquiries that cleared that president, but as soon as it came to open arbitration, they couldn't present whatever evidence it was that cleared them, they couldn't present it in the open. So if something secret about that evidence, if it was out in the open, just when they stand up?
No.
Yeah. So could you go to the SFA? Could you go to the SPL? What? An organisation that have, for Turnbull Hutton, the new club would have been shoehorned in at the top.
Shoehorned right into the top league, yep.
You're going to say, they seem pretty biased, those two organisations we can go to. So where does that leave us to go? And I think you're going to have to go to UEFA. I don't think there's recourse within Scottish football. They've shown they're unwilling to take action. They've shown biased against Celtic. Well, where do you go? And, it's kind of daft. We're going to ask the SFA because we know they're biased against us. They've shown it in the past. We've got evidence that shows that they don't deal with us fairly. So it needs to go outside of Scottish football. Or, you know, I would say go to the courts, but yet again, you touched on it earlier. How many millions has it cost us because bias within the courts issuing wrong warrants, all because it was something that affected Rangers?
And at the highest level, Lawrence, and that's the biggest.
Probably not costing the country over £100 million.
yes,
conversation to people because it affected Rangers. And you think, well, are we going to get a fair crack at what they are? And I honestly think they need to go a year for. I think it's...
And we need to stress, Lawrence, not because of what happened last night, because of the ongoing issues and the safety concerns.
Well, this isn't an isolated incident. You know, it's part of the problem. That's just a symptom of the problems that we've got. And the thing is, they're not doing anything to address them. They'll speak out occasionally about the songs, but by and large, they don't do anything.
No.
UEFA did. You know, pretty soon they stopped the European games because UEFA closed stands. Guess what? SFA, look what UEFA did. They stepped in. They closed stands. The single one of the stops are European games. Why, you know, you hear something that works that stops that symptom of it. It might change part of the psyche if they're not singing those songs for 90 minutes.
Follow suit. The other thing I'm going to say here, and I'll come to yourself on this first, James, is you look at the next game that we play, Rangers at Ibrox, for example, right? And you look at the circumstances around what's happening this season. We were talking about implosion last week. Yesterday we spoke about domination. Some people don't like to hear the word domination being uttered by a Celtic fan or a Celtic podcast. You know, we're basically looking at a situation where if you don't want to dominate the game, then what is your ambition? However, the implosion element of it, that could well happen if obviously things go our way. But the toxic environment at Ibrox, I'm pretty sure Ange would much prefer a fan base of some description there. But you imagine that toxic environment come the final fixture this season at Ibrox, and you know that is where the real implosion might occur.
I think the implosion might be by the next Celtic Rangers game. You're seeing the reason the last final against them was sort of so satisfying was because all the murmurings you'd heard from their side in the sort of days and the weeks leading up to it. It was, they had some sort of ego around them, which I don't know where this ego had came from. Celtic have really got them at every single stage, and you're hearing the same murmurs start to crop up, whether it's Ali McCoist or others in the media coming out talking all the rubbish. So I'm much like every other Celtic fan, very confident heading into the next derby. I can see it being sort of shades of when we played them last February. That was an absolutely fantastic night, and this is going to be an absolutely fantastic afternoon. I think the implosion will come sooner.
If indeed we go to Ibrox, Lawrence, how safe are the players and staff?
I'm going to say something to you. If we won the game at Celtic Park and we beat them in the semi-final and we're standing on the threshold of another treble, the game after the split, do we only lose 3 points if we refuse to play that fixture? We say, you know what, have the 3-0 win because your stadium is not safe. Would that bring it to a head, Mo?
I'm sure it would, aye. I'm sure it would.
Well, if it's only 3 points, there's something Celtic could do. Because at that point, the governing body's having it acted, they're never going to act, are they?
That would be a bold move, Lawrence. Do you think that as a club, that's the kind of move we would make?
We've already said no fans. At some point, it needs to come down to that. How safe is it going to be? You know, well, Celtic Park, I expect to pass without much incident. But then we've got Hampden. You know, there was already pubs, Paddy Neeson's on the south side, get attacked, the Rangers fans. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just in the stadium now. What happens if we win the semi-final? What kind of incidents will occur then? And I think it's something the club need to think about. You know, if we're ahead, it's not putting the league in danger. We need to make some kind of statement on it and say, well, actually, look, we're going to give them the 3 points because we can't be putting our players and our staff.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
In that type of environment.
Yeah. No, you're right. Because we've already refused the tickets, right? Because we know the fans aren't safe. What about the staff? What about the players? This is a massive issue, and it is one that we've dedicated the vast majority of the show to, but I think it has to be discussed. We do have loads of great comments coming in. Celtic follower on the YouTube channel last night showed, this is an interesting point, and I totally agree with it, that all sections of the Ibrox club are full of rage and hatred towards Celtic simply because no matter if it's academy, B team, first team, or the women's team. Meanwhile, we just don't stop. That's true. But yeah, it came, you know, loud and clear last night that is the attitude. We're asking what will happen. Michael Ross says nothing will be done. And we all know it. Time for Celtic to stand up to this. And Lawrence has given some idea as to what Celtic as a football club can do. And I hope that we are able to take them to task on it, because I have no confidence whatsoever that the authorities are going to do it. Want to talk a wee bit about the football, lads, before we go? 15 minutes to go, I would say. Listen, so.
Wait, what a tight score of an equaliser, really?
I know, 99.
What a tight score of an equaliser.
Absolutely. We've done a lot of chat over the last day or so around Callum McGregor leading into the weekend's games. James, he was about to make his 50th appearance, which he did. I'm astonished at how quickly he's made those appearances, actually, you know, making his debut in 2017. This is the first game of 2023. And I asked Colin a question yesterday. I said, right, the way that McGregor's going about his business, the way that, you know, he's got a level of consistency at Celtic that you don't see wavering anytime soon. And I asked the question, could McGregor do something similar to Brown and play at the top level for Celtic and potentially Scotland until he's 35? And Colin said, yeah, well, if he was to do that and win Scottish caps at the rate that he's won them since he made his debut, he would win 100 Scottish caps by the time he's 35. Do you think that's beyond him? Do you think that's doable?
So we've got a good crop of midfielders coming through. I think Lewis Ferguson's done a lot of good things over at Bologna. I don't know what has happened to Billy Gilmour's career. He just seems to be everywhere he goes, something unlucky happens to him. But we've got a lot of confidence in Cam McGregor. We know how good he is. We've seen him play in the Champions League in absolutely boss games, and we've seen him boss games for Scotland as well. And hopefully we'll see him boss it tonight against Spain's midfield, Pedri and Gavi, the Barca midfield. It's going to be tough, but I can't wait to see how McGregor handles it, because it'll be a wee preview to see how McGregor will handle it in the Champions League next season. But I've got no doubts that he'll probably be playing for Celtic by the time he's 35. The levels haven't dropped for McGregor. If anything, we've seen McGregor gradually get better. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably playing, people say he played at his best under Rodgers when he was in a bit more of a forward-thinking role. But I think we're seeing McGregor at his best now. I think in this current Ange Postecoglou team, this is the best Cal McGregor we've seen. And I hope as he gets older, like Scott Brown, if he can adapt his sort of play style to sort of suit his limitations and his advantages, then I've got no doubts he'll have a very, very lengthy career.
Yeah, I mean, right, I'm going to ask you, Lawrence, what your thoughts are on that. It's a good point by James. James reckons that Callum is at his finest right now under Ange Postecoglou. What's your take?
I think it's probably the best team he's played in. So that maybe takes a slant on, you know, how you view him. I liked him further forward, but it's great at the back. Will he do 100 caps for Scotland? James has touched on, you know, there's a lot of other young midfielders coming through, so they're going to put him under pressure. He'll need to keep his levels up. Well, will he keep his place in the Celtic team for the next 3 or 4 years? Because we're stepping up the levels and just constantly looking to improve that team. So 100 games for Scotland is very much going to depend, if he can keep his place in the Celtic team, which I think is going to be more of a challenge for him. I think if he keeps his place in the Celtic team, he gets 100 caps. But it's going to be the competition that Ange is going to bring in, the way he drives our team forward for Europe. That's going to be Callum's main challenge. If he does it all at Celtic, I think 100 caps just falls in.
By the way, I know that people are saying, well, imagine saying that. You know, nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow, never mind in 5 years. Absolutely. But, you know, you can look ahead. By the way, I dropped out a wee bit there. So if you heard me rambling as Lawrence was talking, apologies for that. I dropped out. Someone's obviously been tuning into my Wi-Fi here, or maybe somebody else is trying to get us offline, off the grid. David Boyle, nothing will change unless Celtic go to UEFA and insist on a review of the governing of Scottish football, including the refereeing structures. And by the way, it should have been done long before now, I would suggest, David. Callum McGregor, yeah, absolutely. It's brilliant to see him really cement his place in the Scotland squad. His Celtic career took a wee while to get going. I'm going to agree with James. I reckon this is the best Callum McGregor. This is the best version of Callum that we've seen. There's also been quite a lot of chat.
The team as well. The way he is, isn't it? Every attack that we have, we play it from the back, but Callum McGregor is the link. It links our attack and our defence. Where would we be without him? He's an absolutely phenomenal player. He's I think this is arguably the most important he's been to a Celtic team as well. His role in the Celtic team, not just because he's the captain, but the way he plays is more important to the Celtic team than it was to Brendan Rodgers' team as well. Not only is his quality improved, but his importance to the team has improved as well.
No, you're spot on. And I think that to have that player in a team that everything kind of flows through, at the same time, you know, and I know he's only 29, but you've also got to, and I think, I don't know if we did this with Bruni, you've also got to have that succession plan in mind, because how do you replace it? They become very, very difficult, if not irreplaceable, to replace. So we need to keep that in mind. Maybe in 3 or 4 seasons' time, Anthony S comes in. What can Celtic do? Asks Anthony. There is nothing they can do. Imagine they pulled out of a trophy or something. Well, Lauren said something similar earlier. All the fans who are Celtic must act would be like, not that way. At least he will be fired, surely. Will he be fired? We'll wait and see. Obviously, there's a lot of things going to be happening in the next few days. Another player, not on international duty, but there has been a few headlines in relation to a documentary that appeared in, is our very own Kyogo. He has come out and said that he is happy at Celtic, Lawrence. And he also spoke about, obviously, the aftermath of not getting into the World Cup squad, but he's all about Celtic. He wants success at Celtic Football Club, and he's shut down a lot of the rumour mongers that I'm pretty sure will re-emerge over the summer months. But Kyogo, he's so, so important to Celtic. If you look at that spine of the team, we've got O knocking on the door. I don't think he's quite there yet. And Kyogo's heading for 30 goals. And you think to yourself, it's brilliant that playing for Celtic isn't going to stop him. You know, sorry, not getting selected for Japan isn't going to stop him from being happy and being successful at Celtic.
Yeah, I think when you hear him speak, he reflects in his games and he knows he's got work to do to improve and he knows how he can improve. So maybe he's saying, well, if I do that, I'll put more pressure on it, the Japanese manager, to select him. You know, he's controlling the things he can control, can't he? You can't really say, you know, he doesn't pick the Japanese squad. So saying, if I can get better, I'll give myself a better chance of getting in. The job he's doing for us just now, it's outstanding, the amount of goals he's scored. But then again, that's what Ange sets his team up to do, to score goals. You know, I think players that leave us, you know, Giakoumakis, as much as he scored goals when he came on, he's lucky to play in a team that gives strikers this amount of opportunities. And again, you know, not every team you play in is going to get, you know, 17, 20, 25 opportunities in a game. So this has got to be a dream for a striker to play in, knowing you're going to get opportunities every week, multiple opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, if you back yourself to, I don't know, score 1 in 4 out of your opportunities, you know you're going to be in the score sheet every week. It's got to be phenomenal for strikers. Why wouldn't they be happy? You know, we're an attacking team and they've got loads of chances. It's not like, you know, we're sitting 10 men behind the ball and just asking them to hold the ball up. So, yeah, it's great news. And, you know, I think he's one of the guys that appreciates what he's got.
Right, that last bit there, Lawrence, was what I was going to speak about. Players appreciating what they've got, James. So Lawrence quite rightly says there, we create a lot of chances and you know, people start believing the hype when they scored 30 goals or whatever in a season for Celtic. And one of the players that started believing the hype that he could play for England was Gary Hooper. And he goes down to Norwich and his career, you know, has been a bit, you know, is it mediocre? Has he turned into a journeyman? Probably, right? Yeah. Because they believe the hype, because they're scoring goals for Celtic. It's like people who come to Celtic and get success and start winning trophies, and then they've got one eye on their next move. They then move, and it's normally after their career. They talk about their finest time of their career being at Celtic Park, because not every club wins trophies like that. Not every club creates chances like that. It's great and refreshing to hear Kyogo coming out and saying how happy he is here.
Yeah, he's absolutely delighted at the club. The only sort of worry I would have with him leaving, I think he'd maybe go to Germany, he'd go to the Bundesliga, because his management team, he's been, if you've kept up with him on social media, he's been floating about with his management team quite a lot more than sport. And they've really been good at managing Asian players in the Bundesliga. So if Kyogo was going to go anywhere, I think his pathway would be over there. We know how much Japanese players there is over there. But if you've seen the documentary, there's a boy over on Twitter after the show, Celtic_Studio_JP, he's translated it all to English. And it's really interesting. You can see Kyogo when the Japanese squad's getting read out. He stayed up to 5 a.m. our time to see squad getting announced. He hears Daisen Maeda get picked for the squad, and he must have got his hopes up, and that's a certain player. Maybe I'll be in the team, but no, he hasn't. But I'm sure one thing we can agree is after that World Cup squad announcement and Kyogo Hatate missing out on the squad, what's happened since then? They've both upped the levels. They've both improved massively. So I'm sure Moriyasu will be taking note of that. If we hoped that this World Cup and these players missing out on it would spur them on. The players that were at the World Cup, they've got the confidence and they're playing better. The players that missed out narrowly in the squad have improved as well. If in the World Cup, it's done absolute wonders for Celtic. And I think I mentioned the potential pathway to the Bundesliga, but I think Kyogo is tunnel vision. He seems really happy at Celtic, and long may it continue.
It's a great point you make, James, in relation to that, because a lot of players could mope about the place, you know, with the disappointment of a snub at the World Cup. That's not happened to Hatate and Kyogo, far from it. Great to see Barry McCluskey on the comments. To me, the Ibrox club are responsible for the culture that exists there. Not having green on Celtic crest. Yeah, that's right. Even on graphics on social media, they refuse to have Celtic's crest in full colour. It's in black and white and see-through and all that.
Wait, one of the funniest things, remember, the teen eggs Benedictoff, the menu, because the new Pope was Benedict. And you're like, I know. Didn't you realise it was called after a Pope anyway? You know, just called after a Pope. Did you not realise that anyway? Or what about the green paper armies they refused to give away?
Oh, honestly.
Like, oh, come on.
It really is kind of gutter level stuff. Referring to us as the other mob, yeah, it just shows the culture within the club. Remember, we spoke about that at the time. The Old Firm thing, where they're clinging on to that Old Firm tag and try to get us to walk through arches with the Old Firm on it. And now the actions of the staff. Yeah, there is a whole dossier, I'm pretty sure, that you could prepare if you were motivated to do so. And take it further, and let's hope that it does happen, because, you know, it's a very unusual situation, and you imagine being in another European league and thinking, well, they can't actually go to that stadium because the fans aren't safe. What does that say? What does that say about your game when, you know, you can't intervene? The authorities of the game cannot intervene. What's it say about the police authority where you can't keep the safety of fans at bay?
I think your language is wrong. They're saying, well, they can't intervene. It's not that they can't, it's that they won't. That's the problem. The authorities won't intervene. It's not that they can.
That's even worse.
They have the power to close stadiums, to take sanctions. The problem is they won't. And that's the real problem. They refuse to act.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And yeah, we have dedicated quite a lot of time onto it. Some might think it's not a very positive subject, but it has to be discussed. And I'm pretty sure that we've stapled our colours to the mast on that one as well. I also want to speak about a wee bit about Mikey Johnson, right? A wee bit about Mikey, because Lawrence Connolly's been, a champion of Mikey. And we did a show earlier on this season in relation to the 12 loanees that were out. And, you know, it's difficult to say who'll come back. But Mikey was the one that, you know, and I actually said, I think he will come back. I think he will come back, play for Celtic. Obviously, it's put him back in the focus, I would suggest, James, that he came on. He's made his international debut. But we can't just allow a few jinky runs to rule our head on this one. Yet, the situation where wingers at Celtic may be different come this summer, depending on the fitness of James Forrest, the future of Leo Abada. Does Mikey Johnson have a future at Celtic?
Well, if you've listened to me on the almost a year I've been on the podcast, you know what I think of Mikey Johnson. I've never been his biggest fan, and a couple of stepovers against Latvia, an international friendly, hasn't really changed my opinion on him. But we've seen when Ange or other players in the squad have mentioned Mikey Johnson, I've always sort of said how they rate his confidence and the way he's been able to come back from these constant injury setbacks. They know that he has some potential quality there. He just hasn't really had the chance to show it. And from what I've heard from journals talking about him playing over in Portugal, it seems to be sort of similar to when he was at Celtic. Game time isn't really coming to him on the bench mostly. When he comes on, there's flashes. But in the final third, he's indecisive. He doesn't have the quality that you would be looking for in the final third. I don't think he's Celtic quality, but for some reason, I have a strange suspicion that he'll be around here in the summer. But I'm not too sure how happy I would be about it.
No, that's the thing. I do think he'll come back for a couple of other reasons. Probably the fact he's got a lengthy contract at Celtic. He's on a decent wage, which kind of rules out a lot of the clubs who would probably love to have him. You know, you imagine Aberdeen and Hibs, you know, they would take him in a heartbeat, I would guess. They might be out the equation, although another loan deal might happen because we've loaned players like Montgomery and Scales to fellow Scottish clubs. Lawrence, what's your take on Mikey?
First two seasons, what was it, 6 goals, 24 goal games, both seasons. You know, so he looked as if he was going to do it. Decent consistency. Really unlucky with injuries since then. I think the question we've got to ask ourselves is, or I think the question Ange will be asking is, will he make a difference in Europe? Will he improve this team in Europe? And if Ange comes up with the answer to no, even if he's back, he's not going to be playing a part of the team. You know, because it could be the other team don't buy him and he comes back and we can't loan him. Well, so it's about what he's going to contribute to Celtic, and he needs to show that he can make a difference in Europe, I think. Because Ange will be buying people. You know, I think James will see out his contract. I think he'll still be with us. It looks like Leo Bagger will move on, so we'll probably be looking to make an addition. And it'll be an addition that can do something in Europe.
Step up. Yeah.
That pushes the team on.
Mm-hmm.
Mikey's, is it, you know, he's done well, you know, great. The cameos for Ireland, but he's only got a couple, what, month and a half, 2 months of this season left to prove that he can really do something consistently in Portugal and it can add something to us for Europe. I hope he makes it, but I think he's facing an uphill battle here.
Yeah.
I don't think he will.
I think he's a type of player for me, and again, this is something that I was talking about in relation to the loan, making the loan system work for us. There's quality players there. They're just not going to, you know, have a career at Celtic. And if in Mikey's case, you think to yourself, we're not going to get a buyer, we're not going to get a Scottish club to match his wages, then a domestic loan deal could still work because obviously the loan club does not have to pay even the majority of the wages at times. But that player could damage another club in Scotland. It could damage your main rivals in Scotland because he's not going to play against us. So I would much rather that be the case. If he's not going to get this move to Portugal, there's no a buyer, and there's not an offer on the table, bring him back, loan him out to Hibs or Aberdeen. And as I say, it might damage your nearest challengers next season. I think that's a good use of the loan system. Danielle points out that he also called Wee Fran, little rat. The fact that we refer to him as Wee Fran means that, you know, we're Wee Fran here. We like him. And obviously, we do have a Fran Alonso jacket in the studio as well, which I was going to wear today, but I thought better not. Angel, like, I take all my kids to watch the girls. It was not great to see for kids. Absolutely. Right. I think we have covered that. Let us know your thoughts if you're watching us on the catch-up. Comment underneath the video. What's your thoughts? What should be done? What do you think will be done about the ongoing issue in relation to one club in Scottish football? Thanks, everybody, for getting involved in the chat. It has been a really quick hour, and we do appreciate all your support. Give us a thumbs up and also subscribe to the channel. If you want to come and see us live, we're going to be on a stage next month with Alan Thompson and separately with John Hartson. Tickets are underneath in the links. Thank you to James McKenzie and Lawrence Connolly for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Network.